Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners. Care of Nature Now at kptz.org.
Hello, this is Deborah Kelso, host of this edition of Nature Now on this fine drizzly fall day. We are very pleased to be out in the field again, literally out in the field, as our topic for this week is prairies. But before we get to our main topic, let's first hear the mystery sound of the week. A big hint for the sound of the week is that it is a species associated with prairie ecosystems. We'll play the sound again at the end of the program, and Fred will tell us more about it. And we are looking at prairies from a slightly different perspective today. We are meeting at the gardens for the Chimicum Elementary and Primary Schools, located behind the Chimicum Middle and High School complex, located on a small corner of the former Chimicum Prairie, and brainstorming about how to return a bit of this land to its historic roots. And we have a bunch of people from the school that are interested in this project, so we are very excited to welcome them all. First of all, we have our friend Fred Sharp, who's a long-term prairie enthusiast and expert. And we have Corey Chin, an educator with the Chimicum School District, whose idea it was to try to restore a bit of this land to prairie, not only to help teach the value of the prairie ecosystem, but to help foster an appreciation of these lands for their cultural value to the native people who used to live here and use them. And how about the rest of you? If you would go around and let the radio audience know who you are.
Hi, I'm Shelby Smith. I'm with the board of the Community Wellness Project. We're a small nonprofit that's been fundraising and coordinating the elementary and primary gardens at Chimicum for the last 2 years. And we're working hard on sort of the large umbrella topics of farm to school. So sourcing locally grown food, cooking from scratch in the kitchens, having kids get their hands dirty and grow food here in the school gardens, and really just learning about all the connections that make up a food system.
It's such a great idea. Yeah, and this is a beautiful space. We're all outside in the gardens here, and the noise that you hear in the background is them putting together a greenhouse, which will make it even better. And Corey.
Yeah, hi. I'm the Chimicum School Garden Coordinator for the elementary school and for Chimicum Creek Primary School. So we have two different gardens that started in the fall of 2019. So it's a pretty new program. And yeah, we just started classes back out here this fall, and it's been really fun and just continuing to grow and build these gardens, and really excited about this little prairie project.
Yeah, we're excited too.
I'm Catherine Lamka, and I'm also on the board of the Community Wellness Project. And so we've been working hard over the last couple of years to do the fundraising, as Shelby said. And this is so exciting today to see this greenhouse, because we have been waiting and waiting for it. I'm also on the school board as of last week here in Chimicum. So I'm really taking an interest in this whole effort for farm to school and local foods and healthy kids.
Yes, indeed.
Hi, my name is Rachel Van Lannen, and I'm on the board of the Community Wellness Program, which is why I'm here, to support the project. I'm also a local farmer, and my kid goes to Chimicum, so that's why we're here.
Yeah, well, we're very happy to have you all. So, Corey, I need to ask about what your role exactly is at the school, and how did you get this idea for a demonstration prairie?
Yeah, so I'm the garden coordinator, the school garden coordinator here, and actually with the Community Wellness Project that is kind of leading the efforts with these gardens, we had discussed, I think we first started talking about planting camas bulbs and just liked the idea of having like a little patch of camas here, and then that just kind of grew into what if we planted a whole native prairie? And I got in touch with Forrest Schomer, and he put me in touch with Fred Sharp. And so we got to talking, and Fred was really excited about this prairie, this little prairie project.
It doesn't take much to get Fred excited about the prairie. He loves it dearly.
And Fred's excitement got me really excited. And now, it's going to be really fun. I'm looking at our barren little square that I marked out right now, and it's just kind of a few weeds and mostly sand, and excited for it to be a thriving prairie maybe someday.
Well, it might take some time, but it should happen. We'd like to offer a shout out to Mackenzie Grinnell. He was unfortunately not able to join us today, but Mackenzie is a tribal member and assistant for the Jamestown Clallam Tribe's traditional food program. He and his tribe were involved in efforts to restore a working prairie land earlier this year in the open grassland behind the Audubon Dungeness River Center just outside of Squim. And they had the goal of restoring an area where the tribe could grow and harvest traditional plants, camas among them, and native grasses to be used for cooking, medicine, and art. And he will be an important advisory member of the restoration team on the former Chimicum Prairie.
It's so wonderful to have the Clallams leading the way with prairie restoration. And so, super excited about interacting with them and using both their newfound and ancient wisdom in these endeavors.
Yes. So, Fred, we've had you on Nature Now before talking about prairie habitats, but how did you become involved with this particular project?
Well, it's hard not to fall in love with these prairie ecosystems. They're such places of beauty and antiquity. You know, human evolution, you know, hominids really came into their own over the past 10 million years, and it's largely thought we are creatures of the prairie out of Africa. And so we have an innate disposition to enjoy these ecosystems. And here on the Olympic Peninsula, because we're so far north, we're situated at the very northern end of the California Mediterranean zone. And so for these open bunch grass and oak savannas to persist, they really require a lot of human tending. And so these prairies are deeply and intimately connected to native peoples and their programs of food procurement. And the importance of these prairies can be seen in, you know, the camas, a beautiful lily with the tasty, nutritious bulb. It was the second most importantly traded item to the Clallams after smoked salmon, right? So it's hugely important to these local peoples. And I couldn't help being attracted to these prairie ecosystems in that they've always required lots of human labor and love to keep them producing bountiful foods. And they're extremely important bioregionally for diversity. And so it's just great to see this outpouring of support here. And we're all looking over at this patch of ground and can only imagine, 5 years from now, what a cornucopia of foods it's going to be.
Yes, indeed. So maybe we should ask you to define what a prairie ecosystem is, and how do we recognize one?
Well, prairies, we know prairies largely from the Midwest, right? We're a huge prairie country, and our prairies in many ways are similar to those that we see in the Midwest, in that they were formed on the heels of the glass glaciation. They're often areas that can have relatively dry summers and wet winters. Although in the Midwest, just like here, fires are a really important part of maintaining these sites. The browsing and the grazing of animals has also been really huge, similar as we see the bison in the Midwest. Elk and deer here grazing are really important. Also some of the smaller mammals. Some of the biggest prairies on the Olympic Peninsula are Forks Prairie and the Quileute Prairies, which were miles long and wide, and beautiful black, dark soils characterize grassland ecosystems. Good grass, the bunch grass is the true power broker in these sites. Just like our forests, there's an overproduction of organic materials that rounds up as standing dead logs, snags, and a large duff layer. Well, same thing happens in the soil. When you look at these prairies, the bunch grasses, they actually have 5 times more biomass underneath the ground.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
So these beautiful black soils that we have here, that's the humic. It's this, it's the partially degraded but very nutrient-rich underground roots that are still in the soils and produce these beautiful black soils. And so, and here in the Olympic rain shadow, the Olympic Peninsula, it's one of the wettest spots in the contiguous United States, right? But because we have these nearly 8,000-foot range of mountains, they effectively block the incoming moisture from the ocean. And here in this beautiful banana belt in the Northeast Olympics, we have much, much drier here, you know, down to 14 inches in parts of the rain shadow. Plus the fact that we're also part of a Mediterranean zone, the northern part of it. So we do have typically, you know, very dry summers, some of the driest summers, the driest, you know, July and August, pretty much anywhere in the country. We also have the importance of the deglaciation. We have very often very coarse textured, low nutrient, well-drained soils that typically don't promote tree growth, but support herbs and forbs and grasses, which are part of prairie ecosystems. Also, we have lots of south-facing bluffs overlooking the water. The south-facing, when you face the equator, you get a lot more solar input. That tends to dry things out and support prairie ecosystems. Lightning fires, particularly in the high country and the rock outcrops, but probably most importantly is that these prairie ecosystems have been tended for, well, probably back to 5,000 years BC by native peoples through fire tending, which keep their open productivity and their beauty.
So could you give us a little background about this specific prairie, about the Chimicum Prairie that used to grace this valley?
Well, there's dozens of these pocket prairies found around the Olympic Peninsula, and they all have very unique ecologies and unique histories. And the Chimicum Prairie is really amazing. It's got very interesting and unusual history. It was one that was colonized quite early by Europeans. You know, in fact, you know, the Chimicum Creek and the wetlands and Camas Bogs that occurred here, this place is like material for a biosphere reserve or World Heritage Site. It was so productive and so important to Native peoples. And so you couldn't help but being drawn to it. I just get this strange feeling when I'm moving through past prairie habitats. Almost like I get this strange tingling on the back of my neck that when I look at these ancient sites, and it's like I always felt this about Chimicum area, but I'd never really, you know, followed up to find out that, you know, what was the history. And Dave Peters and Stan Graham from the U.S. Forest Service down in Olympia, they provided me with a soil map of showing prairie soils around the Olympic Peninsula, and it's like, darn tootin', no way! There it was, in these beautiful prairie soils. And so I started poking around, and it's like, oh my God, it's like, this place is super cool. It's got all the prairie characteristics. I do a lot of tree dating, dendrochronology around the edges of prairies to see, look at forest structure, and that can tell you a lot about, you know, a lot of these, some of these firs, they can live to be well over 1,000 years. And so they're great holders of climatic knowledge and fire history. And so it became really evident that, yeah, this was, in fact, a former prairie ecosystem. And its history is very unusual in that.
I mean, it was an industrial zone, wasn't it? I mean,
yes.
That's something that I couldn't believe, that there had been major industry here.
Yeah, it was so important in the early days, around the late 1800s. This place was actually called New Pennsylvania because of its large steelworks and large lumber mills and coke plant. Then the alcohol plant came online. Huge important area for dairying and hop growing, and the kind of one of the tragic interfaces with modern peoples is that the ironworks were built on the speculation that there would be sufficient bog iron extracted from the Camas Bogs in order to fuel this giant steelworks. And it worked fabulous for about 2 months, but in that time they quickly depleted the wetlands and the bog iron in the wetlands, and so they had to look for other sources, but wound up eventually failing after about 10 years. So it had a very unusual and intensive European presence.
And after the industry failed, then it got converted into farmlands,
yeah, highly
and dairy lands
and you know, surrounding timberlands, and wonderfully productive and great for the local communities. Very problematic for the prairie, of course, because once you have that kind of intensive agriculture, usually a lot of the prairie plants have wound up disappearing. And
do you think that there are remnants of the prairie species here?
Well, it's a really great question, and that's why it's so wonderful to get school kids involved and the community involved, because you never know where they could be lingering, right? What we do know, though, is that there are some really important sites very close here on the Quimper Peninsula that can act as great reservoirs of genetic diversity, so we can re-import these plants back to the site. That includes the Washington Native Plant Society stewardship at the Kaitai Prairie, right in Port Townsend. Beautiful little, you know, couple of acre fragment. Also, Port Wilson, Beckett Point, all these places have remnant prairie ecosystems that can serve as a seed source. Now we kind of associate prairies with like the most rugged, harshest, sandiest, rockiest sites, like golf course roughs and fence lines, and where the settlers cleared the fields and piled up the boulders around the base of the oak trees. That's where we find the surviving prairies. But in the days of yore, the prairies actually thrived mostly around wetlands and in the deepest, darkest, richest soils that were the most easily tilled with their digging sticks. You know, camas is very tolerant. It has a very broad ecological, what we call amplitude, meaning it can grow from really dry sites like we see at Kaitai to some of the wettest meadows. And you'll find camas out in the bogs on the west end and growing in pure sphagnum, pure peat moss. So remarkably acidic, soggy, wet sites. Now those sites will dry out in summer. Yeah, when those ponds sort of draw down, the what we call a raised bog, some of those camas will be up and out and they'll get the drying they need during the summer to go dormant.
Can a prairie be started anywhere?
We have a strange perception, but really, you know, prairies can go anywhere. Any place that competing trees or shrub vegetation can be kept at bay, which you find in most people's yards now. So, prairies can be done by anyone, anywhere. For us in this modern day of fire suppression, well, any planter box, any small garden in your windowsill, on your porch, on your roof, you just get some good soils, some native seeds, and the seeds can be procured from Forrest Schomer at Inside Passage Seeds right here in Port Townsend. And once you have those seeds, you just sprinkle them on, just sprinkle your seeds on the soil this time of the year, and the nature does the rest because it's all local, right? So yeah, anybody, anywhere can help in these conservation efforts.
We will return to Corey Chin and the Chimicum School's Prairie Restoration Project for part two of our program at the end of the month. But meanwhile, our sound engineer, Nora Petrich, got so excited at the idea of prairie restoration that she invited Fred and me out on a visit to explore the possibilities of returning part of their own property to a prairie habitat. We conclude our show this week with a clip from this site visit. Nora and Jim's property includes a couple of interesting wetland areas that are surrounded by some open grassland areas that have great potential for prairie restoration.
Hey, Fred, thanks for coming out to look at this grassland we've been living on for over 30 years.
You know, some of the oldest living beings on the Quimper Peninsula are those wonderfully gnarled ancient firs that are 600, maybe 700 years old that grew on this Tibbles Lake District plateau, indicating this was probably former open savanna. And in savanna environments, they typically have an understory or a ground cover of wildflowers and perhaps camas and bunch grass. And so this is a really hyper suitable site. And as long as the indigenous community here, the ancient Chimicums, if there was fire sweeping through here on a regular basis, which I believe there was, this would be a highly suitable site for a prairie. Some seeds and the will to see the old ways return again, and then it happens.
But don't you need a certain soil type to start with?
Ideally, but that can all be built up and brought in. But soil's not a problem. Soil will get built up.
But what about other species? Like with the school location, they had already, you know, taken the grass out and prepared it for next stage. But with this, you've got grasses that are established already. Is it hard to remove the grasses so that they don't compete?
Great question, and it's best to start small.
Just experiment.
Yeah, exactly. You figure your first year is just going to be maybe 1 square meter, and that's plenty to deal with because you're learning. There's so much to be learned about germination and transplanting and sprouts.
You attract weeds. If you start too big, you're going to end up with weeds instead of and so the species that you're trying to foster.
Exactly. And you've got a lot of these sod-forming grasses that want to encroach from the sides. You can put down some metal flashing, some metal sheeting, go down 1 foot and just create a little perimeter, create a little safe site. So at least you're not getting the roots coming in. you'll be getting aerial fallout of seeds and dandelions that parachute in, all kinds of things. Nature abhors a vacuum, and you create some open soil. Everybody wants a piece of the action.
Especially when there's good sun, like there is here.
Especially when there's good sun and lots of wind here to bring. With this kind of winds today, we're probably getting seeds blown up from Baja. So there's lots of fallout. I see right over those nice planter boxes. Let's get those charred and get those strawberries out of there. We'll get some camas in here.
So, yeah, let's get out there in the wind and see if there's some areas where we can get some native plants growing.
The old timers said that this was scraped by the glaciers.
Huh, yep, I can imagine. Did you ever find any wood that you dig up or anything, or you did the foundation, any woods or anything?
That's a good question.
Wood with charcoal. And, well, we can go back and consult Chris Chaffel's soil maps and see if there's any evidence of a prairie here, but with these ancient wolf trees nearby, they're the super gnarled, ancient gnarled trees, the elders. I guess I'm kind of an elder now myself. It's a wolf bane. Great candidate for restoration here. Especially, I think that was some of the best camas growing areas where when you had camas surrounding wetlands. So ultimately, a little strip of tarping and getting the canary grass knocked back and then getting some flashing in to prevent its rhizome encroachment from the side, and you could have some fantastic wet camas prairie here. There's canary grass out here in the bottom. You can see how sparse it is here. It doesn't like heavy flooding. I would just start bringing aquatic plants in.
Aquatic?
Yeah, I would like, you can get sphagnum, cranberries.
You mean in terms of recovering wetland area?
Yeah, recovering a wetland,
restoring a prairie.
This is so wet here, right? That
It would never.
But there's all kinds of delightful wetland plants, arrowleaf, spirea shrubs, lots of species that like calatrice, and there's quite a few that native milfoils that you could get in the pond itself.
And even if the water's going to rise 6 to 8 feet.
Yeah. So this is the first time you've seen it this dry before, huh?
No, it's not the first time, but it's the first time in at least a decade.
Uh huh. Incredible candidate for restoration. I would like some of your hardhack shrubs, get some bulrushes, some beautiful tall Scirpus bulrushes would be fabulous here. I could see lots of potential here for restoring this wetland. Wow. It's well on its way with all the cattail. This is fantastic. By starting small, the first year, my friend Sammy, he says, you start out with start with 30 seeds, and then you jump to 300 seeds the next year, and then 3,000, and then 3 acres, and then 30 acres. It's just this ratcheting up process, and you're constantly just, there's so many areas that need to be investigated beforehand with your ability to control the weeds and how the plants are doing, how much they dry out in summer, and so it's really fun. This is like the greatest spot to be in. So yeah, this is going to be fun.
Yay.
I'm on it.
Yay.
And here's our mystery sound again.
It's a western meadowlark. One of the first bird songs that I fell in love with as a child growing up in the grasslands of Colorado. And we chose it today not only because it's a beautiful sound and a species that lives on the prairie lands, but because our friends Varn Brooks and Karen Lull saw one a few days ago in a prairie remnant at the Kai Tai Lagoon Nature Park. Do you want to tell us more about this lovely and increasingly rare bird, Fred?
Yeah, meadowlarks are fabulous birds. They're probably a true emblem of the American West. In fact, 6 states have them as their official state bird, most ubiquitous out and right in the Midwestern states, and out here to our areas around Fort Lewis and prairies, and formerly all through the rain shadow grasslands of the Olympic Peninsula. They're a robin-sized bird, beautiful yellow underbelly with a black chevron on their breast. They make a beautiful little ground nest. It's a woven tent of grasses that they lay their eggs in. They feed on insects, seeds, and berries, and really, really cool indicator species. And one that's probably a pretty good candidate for eventual reintroduction to these areas. As we've discussed, sadly, they have disappeared from most of our local prairies due to habitat loss, introduced cats and rats. But once you get a viable population back, may their beautiful flute-like whistles once again drift across the Chimicum Prairie.
Yes, we will. We will hope for that day. Thank you so much.
And that's it for KPTZ's Nature Now for the first week of December. Thanks very much to Fred Sharp, Corey Chin, the Community Wellness Project Board for the Chimicum Schools, and Nora Petrich, and to all of you for listening. Closing music this week is Prairie Town by the Wayland Jennies. As always, happy trails.
When it rains, snows in this prairie town, there's a good 3 inches on the ground. Seems I've been losing any peace I've found. I see your face all over this town, but I know you're nowhere to be found. Far away, safe and sound. You're far from this prairie town. You're far from this prairie town. So leaving seems the thing to do. Thoughts of you in my dreams, I'm sitting by you. When you ask me to come to you, to leave these fields and these skies of blue, you know I believe in my sacred ground. I'm leaving this prairie town. Nothing's what it was before.